So now you're with the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation. So
Yes.
before we go into the organization itself, can you elaborate on the concept of worker co-op?
Sure. Well, a worker co-op is an employee-owned business, either partially or fully owned by the employees. There could be other owners as well. But a pure worker co-op is employee-owned. And then they operate on the principles of the co-op movement, which all types of co-ops do. But I think most of the co-ops people are familiar with, like Capital City Credit Union, or Service Credit Union, or the Calgary Co-op Store, MEC, that sort of thing, are consumer co-ops where the shoppers own. So this is different that way.
So in Canada itself, like, what is the historical background of worker co-op movement?
Well, the original roots of the worker co-op movement go all the way back to the start of the co-op movement in Rochdale, England, in the mid-19th century. I think that the really strong start in Canada has been in French-speaking Canada, especially Quebec, probably in the 20s and 30s. Also kind of related to types of co-ops with Fishers and such out east in the Antigonish movement in Nova Scotia and so on. Again, like 1930s, that kind of time frame. But more recent times, I guess there's been a renewed strength in the worker co-op movement, starting probably in about the 70s, 60s and 70s. Again, part of it out of Quebec, especially in terms of the really large numbers of co-ops. That's where they are. Is in Quebec for Canada, but also in Western Canada, especially BC and Manitoba, there've been a fair number coming up through, the sort of alternative, people looking for alternatives a lot were in the natural food industry, that sort of thing. And now more recently, I think, going beyond history, but more recently there's, a new sort of wave of growth happening again as well.
In Alberta itself?
Well, in Alberta, there's never been a really strong presence of the worker co-op sector, but recently we've seen increased interest in sort of two or three areas, I guess. One is in the immigrant communities. Around Edmonton, for example, there's, the Multicultural Health Brokers Co-op. We're working in the health field. About the past 10 years, they've been quite successful in delivering what they call health brokering services between the immigrant and refugee communities and the health services. There's a whole series of others that are coming up from various communities. So that's one area. And then another area is in recent years with a number of plant closures around the region, paper mills and some in the petrochemicals industry and such, and jobs moving offshore, is that people involved in the labor movement are more interested. And that's more of a potential, but there's been an increased collaboration there in terms of seeing labor-backed conversions from struggling businesses to worker co-ops. And there's been a lot of that happening in the U.S., to related models, not necessarily to worker co-ops, but to employee ownership, and also again in Quebec. So that those areas are definitely areas of growth or potential growth.
So do you think that the reason why in Alberta the worker co-op movement is not too strong, do you think it has anything to do with the political environment in Alberta, which is more conservative, say, than Quebec, or even the history of the labor movement in Alberta? Do you see a connection there?
It's hard to say, in a sense, because interestingly, the size of the co-op movement generally in Alberta is huge. I mean, in Canada generally, there's about one third of the population holds a membership in a co-op of some kind, and in Alberta, it's over 65%. And so, it certainly doesn't. Being involved in a cooperative can fit very well in the Alberta context. As far as the worker co-op specifically, I think perhaps the consumer co-ops and the credit unions have been so large that people haven't seen this option as clearly. I don't know. We haven't in the past, as the worker co-op sector, reached out to labor very much, and it's been more on a piecemeal basis, like one particular case, and then people don't really, it hasn't worked in that way. But I think now that we're collaborating more and people can see the benefits, and sometimes there are concerns from labor, like, does this make sense? Will we lose the need for the union or what have you? And as we work through those issues, we can see that, it can fit in Alberta, and we just need to put it into a different context here, I guess.
So what is the sizes of the worker co-op in general? Like, number
Sorry?
Of workers? What is the sizes? Like, number of workers and
okay,
sizes
well,
of the business?
Across Canada, there's about 300 worker co-ops with on the order of, you know, we don't have really great stats, but about 15,000 members involved, members and workers. Much, much larger in Europe and large and growing in Latin America and, you know, other parts of the world. So that's just a vague sense. But it's definitely one of the smaller parts of the co-op movement in Canada. And interestingly, in Europe, I think the worker co-op sector is seen as leading in growth of all parts of the co-op movement. And, you know, that's why we really want to look to Europe and see what kind of supports they're putting in place, in Latin America for that matter as well, what kind of supports are being put in place to make that, you know, to incubate the interest that's out there.
So you're mentioning about this another form of like partially owned worker co-op. Like, do you see a problem there? Like, because say you have this 10 initial workers and they start employing more workers, but these workers are not part of the co-op. Is this a problem that is being faced in the worker co-op movement?
No, that's not what I'm referring to. So if you've got a worker co-op which has only, you know, they've got 25 people working in the business, but they've only let 10 in as members and the others are employees. That's a situation that we as the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation have seen on occasion, and we've tried to see co-ops set their initial structures up so that that isn't possible, so that it remains, you know, fully owned by all workers who want to have a part in ownership, and barriers aren't put up, such as, you know, really large share contributions to become a member and that sort of thing. But what I mean by partially owned is more like a multi-stakeholder co-op model, so that, for example, this is coming up more in areas of social care and healthcare, various parts of the world, but you can have a case where the workers have one part, you know, they own a certain percentage of the co-op, and consumers own a certain percentage of the co-op, so like healthcare consumers could, and maybe community associations own a certain percentage. And I guess the reason I mentioned that in the beginning is because as the Worker Co-op Federation, we made a decision early on that we would like to be inclusive. If there's partial worker ownership that way, we want to welcome those people to participate in the movement. And in Edmonton, there is an example of that, which is the WeCan Co-op. They're a multi-stakeholder co-op.
Okay, so now you mentioned about the organization, the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation. So can you talk about this organization?
Well, the organization first started a little over 15 years ago, or early 90s, when worker co-ops from across the country decided to come together, led by a few people, a few key leaders who thought it would be, you know, worth asking the question, would it be useful to have a federation? And so people were very excited, and we launched the federation was launched. I wasn't involved at the very beginning, but in any case, it operated as sort of an informal network, almost an association of the co-ops across the country for a number of years, while we tried to convince the federal government that they should put some resources into, you know, helping to encourage creation of worker co-ops as is more done in Europe and other places. And so we did successfully make that case to some degree. So we're now in the last six years or so, we're offering more substantive services. So for example, we operate a small fund called the Tenacity Works Fund for worker co-ops, whereby people can get high risk capital to help leverage in other money to start a worker co-op. And we offer some services around helping people to get the kind of technical advice that's very helpful to start a worker co-op. We also run a program whereby people can put their money, their shares inside their worker co-op inside an RRSP, so they get tax benefits, provide annual conferences, newsletters, a website. We have, you know, small staff working across the country and a network of people who we call co-op developers, who are like essentially advisors on startup, who've helped other groups through it, may have, you know, earlier on started up their own co-op, that sort of thing. So they can really help to stop people from reinventing the wheel, so that they, you know, get some good advice and direction.
How many worker co-op in Canada has been affiliated to the CWCF?
We figure we've got about half the worker co-ops in our membership outside Quebec, so that's about 60. Within Quebec, we've been working, there are federations within Quebec, and we've worked more directly with them and have a small number of members that are based there. And then in addition, we have a membership in the Worker Co-op Developers Network, which is about 50 people.
So this other half of Worker Co-op, which is not a member, like what are the reasons why they don't want to like join this network or this federation?
To some degree, we just haven't had the staff resources to go out and recruit. So in some cases, we just haven't had contact with the co-op. You know, occasionally, if they don't have need for our services, they may think they don't want to come into membership. But I think by and large, it's just that we have not yet come across them or been able to go out and talk to them.
So it's just more of logistic, not any fundamental idea of the federation that doesn't fit probably with some of the workers' co-op?
Generally, I think that's true. And that's the reason that, you know, when we hold our annual conferences, we move it around to different... We've been to almost every province now holding our annual meetings. And so this year, coming to Alberta, we're hoping to make more contact with the worker co-ops that are in Alberta, some of whom we haven't had in our membership yet.
So what is the working relationship between the CWCF with the wider labor movement like CLC, other trade unions movement?
Well, that's a very, very large question, but the CLC has actually been an associate member of CWCF since the very beginning and has, collaborated at a high level with CWCF. Like, for example, the International Labor Organization put out a recommendation on promoting and encouraging cooperatives, I think it's about 3 years ago now, and we collaborated with the Canadian Labor Congress to take a Canadian worker co-op and co-op perspective in conjunction with them to the ILO, and that was had a really good result, and it's, kind of percolating around the world, particular countries that have interest in co-ops will look to that document for what kinds of things could be put into place and how to partner with labor and such. In terms of kind of more on the ground practical collaborations, we're really just getting started now because, as I mentioned, we were reaching out on a kind of piecemeal basis. If we hear, for example, when the Weyerhaeuser mill closed in Grande Cache, Alberta, or announced closure a few years back, the union approached us, and we did attempt to put some support in there to try to help them look at the possibility of a worker buyout. But, it's just the unions tend to see the worker co-op as the last resort. When they know there's no other buyer that's going to come in, then they'll consider it, and then it's usually too late. So it's just not worked in that way. So with that in mind, one of our members, Co-op Ventures Worker Co-op, in collaboration with us, hosted a workshop, in Saskatoon in September to invite labor leaders around the prairies and say, well, when these sorts of things happen, can we have done some thinking about it ahead of time? How can we collaborate? What are the concerns? So we work a lot of that out, up front right now. And so by doing that, I think that real collaboration is possible. It remains, we have to see how these things are going to play out. But we're collaborating with some people such as the folks at the Ohio Employee Ownership Center at Kent State University who've been doing this kind of work for about 20 years, I guess, and are willing to come in and provide some assistance, assuming resources can be found to do it. And that doesn't seem to be the big issue. The big issue, I think, is the will on everybody's part to come together. And so we're working in a more concerted way to try to see, those things happen to the benefit of the workers in each case.
So how about like more ideologically, like between the worker co-op movement and the trade union movement, like what has been discussed in terms of ideology, in terms of more fundamentally?
In terms of ideology, it really has there's been a wide variety within the labor movement. There's some labor unions who have really felt that worker ownership does not make sense for them. That's not their traditional way of working, and they're not comfortable going toward it. Then there are others, such as the steel workers, really taking the lead on this, and a few others beside who are very interested in encouraging worker ownership. In Quebec, the CSN union has actually set up a really effective consulting group to help people convert into worker ownership in certain kinds of situations, retiring owners and so on. So there is a wide variety of ideological views. But I mean, I think that if the worker co-op movement and the labor movement can, you know, have a richer dialogue and really be exchanging with each other, we can see where, you know, worker cooperators and trade unionists have the same interest. I mean, it's all about looking after workers and not capital. Capital is a tool. It's not, you know, what it is that we're looking after. Right? It's putting people first. So we need to collaborate there. And it's not been always smooth. And a big part of the reason is that we haven't had enough exchange and collaboration, I think. So I was really pleased when we held this meeting in Saskatoon that the labor people who showed up, by and large, were very keen to figure out, you know, if it's a situation where this makes sense, and it doesn't always make sense, but if it is a situation where it makes sense to talk about a worker buyout as a co-op, how do we do it? You know, what can we get into place? You know, and so that was great. I mean, another just to go back in terms of what are the ideological issues, another issue we have as the worker co-op sector is that the unions can sometimes have the sense that once something becomes worker-owned, once the business becomes worker-owned, the union won't have a place anymore. And, you know, so that can make the labor leaders a bit reticent as well. But I think that most of the cases, and there are, there's not a huge number of them, but the vast majority of that small number that have converted to worker co-ops have kept their unions. If they've been a unionized plant, then they became a co-op. The union stays. And the union plays a different role than the co-op, so the union is looking after each individual worker's interest more so, whereas the, you know, as members of the co-op, they have to look after the business, and it really does have a logic to it, you know.
So do you see the CWCF as economic organization, or is it more political in terms of like pushing the agenda of workers' ownership?
Well, it's whatever the membership wants it to be in terms of the worker co-ops and the developers that make up our membership, you know. I think it's both. It's both a tool for helping people economically, socioeconomically, to start worker co-ops, to run the worker co-ops that are already out there, put them in touch with each other, find common tools and that kind of thing. And it's also an entity for making the political case, you know, to government, to the broader co-op sector, to labor, for why worker cooperation makes sense. So I would say it's both.
Can you comment on a little bit, like, on what's happening in Latin America on the movement, the occupied factory movement, like how that relates? How has any, attempt from the CWCF to actually connect with those movement in Latin America, not only in Argentina, but in Venezuela and some other part of the Latin America?
Well, we have tried to the extent that we can to connect with those movements. It's really exciting developments. You know, we were really, really pleased to see this film, The Take, be made, and the kind of education that was possible through there. We had Avi Lewis attend our annual conference the year it came out and show the film. I think it was one of the very first showings, screenings of the film. And, you know, we've continued to collaborate with those folks. In terms of the actual people involved in Argentina and so on, I mean, we through our affiliation with the International Worker Co-op Federation, which is called SECOPA, we've had some contact with them. I think they have not been as sort of fully present in that organization as we would maybe have hoped. There's a lot of other than Argentina, there's other Latin American countries that are there. We do have a board member who, one of CWCF's board members, sits on that board and has attended meetings down there. I mean, I guess it's a case that we hope to, you know, grow those ties. We're aware of it. We're supportive and morally supportive and have shared some documents with them as well. Ties are there, interest is there. We actually had there was a person from Venezuela in government who expressed interest in coming in the co-ops branch or what have you, and I think that it won't work out coming up for our conference, that is. But anyway, we're in contact and we hope to keep growing that.
you were speaking about the conference. Can you talk about the upcoming conference in Edmonton? Mm.
Well, we're really pleased to have the president of the International Worker Co-op Federation, who will have had, you know, good links with Latin America and other parts of the world, as well as who was also the president of the Mondragon Cooperative Federation, Javier Salaberria, who's coming and making a couple of different presentations on Thursday evening and on Friday morning, part of which will be talking about how do we apply the development lessons of Europe and possibly Latin America to Canada. And we've got a series of workshops. Let's see, what would be a most interesting? We have one workshop that's going to be on co-ops in the immigrant and visible minority communities on Saturday afternoon, led by Von Chu and Ejamu Nagwaya from Toronto, originally Nigeria, who have both been working for a long time in this area. We've got a workshop on collaboration with labor. We'll be talking about how to increase participation, get more participation from your workers within your co-op, conflict resolution. Then on Thursday, the day is really meant to be, it can be a standalone day so that people who want an introduction to the worker co-op movement can come that day. There's going to be some tours in the morning, kind of introduction to the conference, and then workshops that are meant to be like really ABCs, like ABCs of worker cooperatives, and then also how to know if you want to start a co-op, if it's a good opportunity that for a business that you're thinking about, and then the keynote speech in the evening. So those are some of the, and of course we'll have our members meeting, our AGM on Friday afternoon, and a banquet Friday night where we're going to have an award given to the Multicultural Health Brokers as the recipient of our Worker Co-op Merit Award this year.
That sounds like a jam-packed conference there.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you tell the listeners if they'd like to participate in the conference, like who to contact and how to register?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question right now because we have been trying to wrap up our registration, but I'm sure that we can still squeeze a few more people in. At this stage, I think people should either send email to myself or to my assistant as the best way to contact us. For myself, it's hazel@canadianworker, all one word, .coop. And for my assistant, Holly Magnus, it would be cwcf-admin@prairiesky, all one word, .ab.ca.
Okay,
they can also go online and register. So that's another option that I should have mentioned right off the bat, which is signupmaster.com/CWCF. That would be the best.
Okay, thank you, Hazel, for speaking to us.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, just speaking now was Hazel Corcoran, the executive director of the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation.